what I wanted to talk about tonight, because I was giving a free range by Trovster to really talk about whatever I like. And the thing that I always want to talk about when I do conferences and things is icon design. But because everyone's very kind of very web specific, I never get the chance. So tonight, I'm going to bore you rigid with the whole icon design thing. I'm going to split it up into three bits. We've got a theory bit, a bit of a techie bit, and then a practical bit, so actually creating icons. So when we're talking about icons, what kinds are we actually going to be looking at tonight? Well, the one I'm sure that everyone here has actually done at some point is favicons, yeah? Has everyone at some point had to create a favicon? Maybe they've had to do it by taking a GIF, renaming it .ico and putting it on a server. But to be honest, I think the favicon is... who calls it favicon, by the way? Does anyone know the real... Because it's favorite, isn't it? So I don't know. Doing a favicon is the is kind of like the ultimate icon design art. If you can make it work at 16 pixels, it's always a good test if you're doing a logo. If you make it work at 16 pixels for a favicon, then you're onto a winner. One of my favorites is this one. It's this that looming head of Jeremy Keith looking at you. One of the other forms of icons that we're doing at the moment is website icons. More and more websites are starting to use icons without any kind of caption or text. A good example is MobileMe, which has these sections where it's only separated by icon. When you hover over it, you get a tooltip, but the icon is showing you where to go. Another good example of website icons at the moment is Last.fm. In some ways, actually, they're quite subtle. So little ones for tags and for adding and for playing music. And off for the music player section. These are the good examples of website icons. But the ones that we're going to be looking at the most tonight are actually desktop icons, so application software icons. The reason for this is that if you look at the process for creating a desktop icon, it kind of encompasses all the other things like website icons and favicons and everything. But there's a little bit more to creating a desktop icon. So by covering that, hopefully we'll be able to see everything. Incidentally, one thing I love about icons now is that we're getting larger and larger sizes. So you get great detail. I don't know if everyone can see this great childish comment. I.E. Sachs. So... but that's the kind of thing you can just add in, you know, as a little like Easter egg almost. So, the first part of creating an icon is coming up with a metaphor. What do you use? Now, I want to start off with a little experiment. Everyone's had a few beers. Hopefully I have a good voice. I'm going to quickly show a common public icon that you'll know every day. But it's the speed of the response that I want to get. So when I show this to you, you say what it's for as loud as you can, as quickly as you can. Is everyone ready?
Yeah.
Ready?
Toilets.
Who brought the American? It's really good. I was expecting a lav or bog or something, but everyone was toilets. Very, very. It's funny, isn't it? Because these icons could actually mean anything. When you look at it, you've got the man in quite a sort of aggressive pose, the woman in quite a passive pose. Who knows what that could mean? But we all know by convention that these things mean toilets. Take that example a bit further. There was recently a study that was taken of variations in these public icons. So what they did, they tested four different variations. They tested men and women to see how quickly they reacted. That would have been the right one. So, taking the phone icon as the first example. Over on the left there, A, got a bit of recognition. It's still an old telephone, but it's still got recognition. B was the worst because it just looks a bit kind of, I don't know. It reminded me of an afro with a big screaming mouth. But, you know, that's probably why it only got one. Yes, yeah, one person recognised it as a phone. The interesting one here is C and D, because they're practically the same. But for some reason, men recognise this one more as being a phone. But it just goes to show that the more you fiddle with it, the harder it is. Here's another example. Information. Now, here's a clear winner on this one. A block serif I in a circle. Instant recognized, and that's internationally recognized as well. A lot of languages start information start with an I, which is quite good. So things like this great one here of man with briefcase and question mark and everything. Not quite sure what's going on down beneath the seat here, but this one's great. It's just kind of, I don't know. And unsurprisingly, A got a few marks because it, you know, question suggests that someone needs help. But that's one instance where an actual letter worked really well. Going back to our toilet. WC got a little bit, but this is less international. One good example, I think, is the Firefox logo. When we were doing... Sorry. I don't bring it up again. Is that all right? the globe behind it has no actual countries. And people often point this out and say, you know, what country is that supposed to be? The whole point is that you don't recognise it as any country. So you don't say, oh, that's too Europe-Pacific or US-centric. So going back to this, the classic, as we just showed at the start, was recognised by both people equally. This one being a bit too realistic. This one's fantastic. You can see they're trying to do here some kind of Marilyn Monroe, some like it hot thing, but it ends up looking like a pin. And I think the lack of arms makes a big difference. So this had just the right balance of simplicity, but not to the extent of like removing limbs. So conventions are good. Conventions help us recognise things. Here's a good example that we'll, I'm sure, will remember of life before conventions. RSS. Any site that had an RSS feed has some great ones, like a coffee cup. A pill. I mean, what the hell is that about? And another version of it there. But generally, it was all kind of XML and RSS with Orange until there was an early version of Firefox that included this little... It wasn't me. I'll just mention Opera a few times, just to, you know, Opera. There we go. Right. An early version of Firefox included this little icon. And it started to take a little bit of traction, and then suddenly Microsoft adopted it. And of course, because Microsoft adopted it, suddenly it was everywhere. There's still a few people like Apple that hold out and like to have their little white RSS on blue. But now we have a standard. And even if that's put in a different shape, we've got this recognizable symbol for RSS, which is great. So when thinking of the metaphor, keep it simple and memorable. If there is a convention, consider following it, and we'll talk a bit later about why you would not follow it. So don't be too abstract. If it's meant to be a home icon, something that directs a user to the home page or the home of an application, then make it a picture of a home, you know, rather than showing someone on their journey home or something. So here's a few without conventions. This is an icon for a nursery, which is near my office. So it's supposed to be a child carrying a teddy bear, which to me just looks like a parent dragging a child to nursery who's screaming their head off with, you know, Princess Leia haircut. This one, no ambiguity at all. I mean, they've had to put a lot of detail in there, such as the splash of water. The child doesn't look too bothered, but that's very obvious. You know, don't feed your daughter to the crocodiles. This one, I picked this up from a Flickr pool. I have no idea. What's it meant? Well, I thought it was like disabled people do not blow your own trumpet or something like that. But it's who knows. But then there's some that are just, you know. We just have fun guessing, really. So taking a real brief, I did an icon for an application called Pathfinder, which is a Mac application to replace the Finder. So the basic brief was something that shows you where to go. And there were a few options here. So one was a compass, not fairly self-explanatory, and a map. Roadside signs have been used quite a lot. There are certainly at least two other Mac applications that both use road signs. So in that case, it was a case of, well, I don't want to go down that route to look too the same. A little bit more obscure, this little buggy that comes in the Marslander is called the Pathfinder. We would have created a nice little fun icon, but I think perhaps it's a little bit too obscure for the actual subject. So instead, we went with the compass. And this is actually one example of where it was a good idea to go against some conventions. So rather than just an arrow, or it's something that hasn't been used so far for an application icon. Also, it works quite well as a 16-pixel icon. So when you see it in the menu bar or in a list, it's a bit fuzzy here, but you'll just get the basic dial. So it's an image that will work well small. Also, I think one of the best things to do in the metaphor is to make it fun if you can, specifically for application icons. So where you haven't got to navigate someone, like a home icon. These applications could have been very dull. I mean, this is FTP. This just deletes programs from your Mac. So but what they did instead was to make it bright, colorful, fun, and it makes it instantly memorable. So that's the theory bit. We talked a little bit about the metaphor and the conventions, but we've got to go a little bit into the technical side of icons. If you cut open a desktop icon, this is what you'll find inside. This is a quite extreme example, but the mirror icon has 512 pixel version, 256 all the way down to a 16 pixel version. Now, some platforms use different sizes, other platforms use others. So this is covering all different bases. And here is a lovely chart for you all to memorize and be tested on later. But this will be part of the slide, so you'll be able to look at it. But basically, what this shows is what platform uses what size. So each of these is called an icon resource. So for example, for the latest Mac, you need the three top large icons, a 16 and a 32. So depending on when you see it, you only see a 512 pixel icon when you're doing the fancy cover flow flippy bit. And you only see the 16 when you're looking at it in like in list view, like in column view, that kind of thing. And you'll probably use the have the 128 pixel version when you're looking at it in the dock. But all these different uses need a different size version of the icon. Now, what I want to draw attention to at the moment is Linux. Do we have any Linux users? For the one Linux user in the room, Linux can use SVG, Scalable Vector Graphics, to create an icon that can be expanded and reduced to any size. So that's very clever, and that's the only one that does it. All the rest use these formats, ICO and icons, which are just bitmap formats, so they're just pixels. If you spend a lot of time creating favicons, which you might not do, then this link is a really essential one. This is a guy who's spent a lot of time researching the effects of different favicons in different browsers, because they all have their own little quirks and ways that they do it. Because for some browsers, you can actually get a 32-pixel, slightly larger size favicon. So worth a look if you're really into that kind of thing. So why do we need all these different sizes? Well, one reason, which is going to come up in the future, is resolution independence. At the moment, we have our screens, like, for example, my MacBook screen is, I think it's 1440 by 900 pixels, and it's 72 dots per inch. In the future, we're going to get much more higher density screens and bigger screens. And if you compare that to what we were started off on, say, 640 by 480, then the icons are going to have to really adapt quite hard. And the problem with bitmaps is, of course, they don't scale up. This is a little 32-pixel one from the classic Mac interface, which, once it's been smooth and blown up, doesn't work. So the obvious way to do this is to use a vector file, like SVG. And this is what Coda have done. This is Panic's Coda software. They've got these little icons down here in the status bar. These are actually PDFs. Because a PDF can hold vector information, a tiny little PDF file, which I've actually enlarged a lot here to show you, can actually create an icon that can be expanded and as large as it needs to be without any kind of breakdown of the information. Unfortunately, it only really works for these sort of icons. They're flat colours, there's no detail, they're simple shapes. The problem is they don't really work for today's kind of photorealistic icons. First of all, they're the opposite of bitmaps. The more that they're reduced, the fuzzier they get. If you imagine you've got 8 pixels in a large icon, and you reduce that to become 1 pixel, what you're getting is a fuzzy average of all those 8 pixels. They're also a lot bigger. So if you compare something like, this is the Candy Bar application for the Mac, 100K for a bitmap icon versus 3 megabytes for the vector version. And also the bitmaps are a lot quicker for GPUs to process and display. So here's a good example. Here's the X-Scope icon. Here's the either the 128 or the 512 enlarged. And this is a close-up of the 16-pixel version. This has been created specifically for 16 pixels. So someone's actually done these crisp lines, made sure that at a distance that looks really crisp. Now if you take that large one, reduce it down to 16 pixels, that's what you get. And you can see quite a big difference, especially in here. It's all gone fuzzy, there's no definition, you haven't got the same, got a little bit of strength in the lines here, but you've lost it here and here. And it just looks worse. You can't beat a 16-pixel icon that's been specifically created as a bitmap. So the solution for now, at least, is to create your icons initially huge, sometimes 2 or 8 times the size, but do them as a big vector. Then hopefully sometime in the future there'll be some kind of technology that'll get around all these problems. So, done the theory, done the techie, finally got the how you make it bit. And the example I'm going to use is Silverback, which is an application that's just come out for gorilla usability testing. And I have to stress that because that explains what the whole icon's about. So very first of all, I didn't have to do much in the way of thinking for this icon. ClearLeft already had an idea, which was a gorilla in a lab coat, which I thought was genius. So the next stage is to go to Google Images and research the subject. So I collected lots of images of gorillas, not just photos, but caricatures, the famous gorillas one, just to try and see and get used to the subject. And that's what this stage was for. Pretty crappy doodles, but the whole point of it was to keep on drawing it and drawing it and get used to the features of a gorilla. This one looks a little bit better than some of these ones. I mean, that one's pretty appalling. But the more you draw it, the better you get at doing it, and the more you realise what the features are. So things like, I started to realise that I could be able to define the eyes in this sort of skateboard fashion, so a line with these 2 dots underneath. So the more I draw it, the better it got. So that was the first sketch that was sent to the client. A couple of different options, but as a way of helping them to see what it would look like, because at the moment this is just a black and white scanned in sketch, is you can actually put this into Photoshop, set this as a layer above everything else, set it to multiply so that all the white drops out, and then you can just quickly add a bit of colour on the layer underneath it. And it just gives the client a little bit of a better idea of what's going to happen. So, you know, 2 minutes just to quickly colour it up. The feeling from this stage was that it's a little bit too realistic and they wanted something a bit more caricatured. So, eventually we came up with this sketch, which exaggerated the whole kind of breasts and head and made everything below really small. And that worked. So once we've got an approved sketch like this, we can move on and do the very basic Illustrator stage.
Oops.
There are lots of vector applications that you can use to create an icon in. Illustrator, though, is particularly good in that if you need to use it for something else afterwards, such as a logo or print materials, then they come back to you and say, we want it as a banner 15 foot high, and you've got it as a bitmap in Photoshop, it's a little bit hard. But at least with Illustrator, you can repurpose it easily for other things. In terms of actual drawing tools, I prefer Fireworks. It's much easier to get pixel perfect crisp icons. Illustrator is a bit fuzzy like that, but Illustrator is better for using it for other things. So save yourself the worry and create it in something like Illustrator afterwards. So what I've done here, the sketch has been scanned in, it's put into Illustrator, and then just very basic shapes tracing around it. And it's got very basic gradients as well. Not that complicated, because once you've got the gradient for one, that same gradient's being used up here. So you have a gradient that goes from very dark to very light. So as you get closer towards the top of the head, you're showing the lighter side of the gradient. And again, a bit like the coloured sketches, it's something a bit more to show a client. And then the first final icon. This is the stage where everyone goes, great. Then it goes away and other people look at it for a while. And they come back and they say, this bit here looks a bit phallic, doesn't it? And because you've been close to it all that time, and you've not seen it, and all of a sudden all you can see is this. So another problem was the fact that this didn't look much like a lab coat. Too short, looked like one of those white dinner jackets. So the final tweaks were to bring the lab coat down, and suddenly this area isn't quite so bad. It's the kind of thing that usually someone points out long after, but fortunately we had a chance to go back and correct that. So hooray. Final approved icon. This is the large icon. So the next stage is to go and create all the little smaller versions. Now, because I knew it was going to be Mac only, I could leave out the 24 and the 48. That's for Windows only. Incidentally, you can also see here how it's been set out. I have a layer for the face, the head, the clipboard and the hand, a separate one, coat and the body. It makes it much easier. If I need to enlarge the head, all I have to do is lock all these other layers and grab everything in the head layer. So it just helps to separate it out. So starting with that one, half size for that one, half again for that one. And by the time you get to this one, you have to start tweaking it, start removing some detail until you get down to that size, which especially on this screen looks awful. But little things like bringing out the reflection in the eyes, a little white highlight, so that it looks crisper at a smaller size. So we're almost there. We've created all our different versions. All we need to do now is to create that icons file format. And this is what we do it in, Icon Builder. This is a plugin for Photoshop. So once you've imported the AI file into Photoshop, you can just go to a filter, select Icon Builder, and it will build all the different icon resources for you from your file. Now, one thing I've shown here is a bit of an old problem, so I don't really want to cover it, but it's as well as having the 32-bit icon, you can have 8, 4, or 1-bit. And by the time you get down to 1-bit, it's just black and white. There's no grayscale, there's no blends. It's either black or it's white. And this is really for covering older monitors. So it used to be a problem. You used to have to create all these different colored versions for older icons. But nowadays, everyone's pretty much got good screens, thousands of colors, so you don't really have to worry about that. I tend to leave that. And then when you press save, you're done. And you've got your final icon ready. So just to cover some tips, really, for drawing icons. Vila does a fantastic blog with lots of Illustrator tutorials. And that's a very good place to learn general kind of drawing skills. But just a few specific things are useful for icons. The first one is consistent lighting. if you look at, there's a page on the web, I'll try and put a link out for it, for the Ubuntu project. A guy called David Lanham, really good icon designer, recently redid them all. And when you see them all laid out, you can see how he's used consistent lighting on every object, usually from top left, which is why the shadow sort of comes on the bottom there. And it just adds that little extra consistent feel to every icon that you do. And this is something that the Windows Vista icons show really well. This is a bit more of a style thing, but it does work. If you've got small icons, again, sort of 16 pixels, particularly good if you're doing website icons. I mean, that looks fairly crisp, but just adding a bit of a white, I think this is a bit of a sort of a 50% white border on the inside, it helps to highlight the edge, makes it look a bit crisper. So, this is enlarged huge, but when you see it at 16 pixels, it just has that little bit of extra crispness that makes it. Smart guides. Now, I tried to get a good photo of this, and I think you can kind of see it there. But basically, Illustrator has this thing called smart guides where if you're drawing an object and you want to get, say, 3 or 4 points to meet at exactly the same point, if you turn on smart guides, it's like a magnet. It'll happen automatically. If you try and do it without that, it's always a little bit hit and miss. And when you enlarge the artwork, it really shows the gaps. So smart guides just helps you to bring everything in the right place and also gives you guides as you're moving things to make sure things are central or on a 45-degree angle. Look, it's the Opera Red. Global colours. Again, this is another Illustrator setting. What I usually do for icons is to specify a mid-colour, a light, and a dark of something. So for something like the fur, I've got these specific colours, and they're set to be global. And what that means is when the client comes back and says, we wanted a bit more red than orange, I can go and tweak it in here. And once I've tweaked it, it'll update all the instances I've used in the illustration. It's a real time saver. Now then, I wanted to throw this in at the end. I didn't know that Mark was going to be here today. But what I was going to say is, if you can't be bothered to do icons, there's this fantastic website called famfamfam.com. And I know my friend John Oxton uses them constantly in projects. It's an amazing collection of icons. It really is. And if you want to just dissect icons, because these are really good examples for small 16 pixel icons, go and have a look. Go and download some stuff. Donate if you use them, of course. Is that all right? They're going to be here now. But it's definitely worth mentioning because there's so many icon sites out there like Icon Buffet where you have to pay to get the icons. This is a bigger collection. It's free and it's brilliant. So I just want to finish off with one little section on the kind of applications that you use. Now, we've already covered Illustrator and Icon Builder. That's what I use. But there are other ones out there. For example, if you're on Windows, this Axalis Icon Workshop, from this screenshot, looks a bit complicated and confused, but it's actually really good. And if you're developing on Windows, you can create Mac icons in this. If you really get into icon design and you start collecting them and start making your own, Candy Bar is a fantastic application because it organizes your icons and you can use it to customize your desktop really easily. In particular, you can create these things called iContainers, which when put into Candy Bar, you can choose the background color you see them at and the size. It neatly packages them up for other people to use. And in particular, it has this feature, the quick look. So if you want to look at the icon resources in an application, particularly I find this useful to know how they did something. If I think an icon's particularly good, I want to try and dissect it and look at it really large and see how they did it. So something like this is fantastic for that. But there are also free tools as well. If you do use Linux or you want to use open source, then Inkscape is a really good vector application. But if all you're ever doing is doing favicons and things like that, then there's a good online one called favorcon.com, or there's free downloadable tools like PNG to ICO, which just takes a transparent PNG and creates the file at the end of it. So that's everything, really. That's the introduction. So all the links I've mentioned are going to be on this delicious John Hicks Icon Design Talk. Any questions?